streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob?
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
Into the State of Combat with the Brian Campbell. This is your professional wrestling edition, and folks, this is our final show of the year, at least in terms of regular professional wrestling coverage. Next week on State of Combat, we will have a year-end award show. BC will be back for that, after all.
The In This Campbell Podcast.
It is the In This Campbell Podcast. But today you have the Silver King, Adam Silverstein, and Gentleman Outback Black Jack Crosby, Jungle Boy Jack Crosby. I don't know. There's limitless names, nicknames, I should say, for Jack. Here steering the ship, bringing you the latest, greatest, and may I say, also worst in professional wrestling from the last week. And I think we have plenty of all three to talk about on today's show. Certainly coming right out of NXT and AEW, the final shows of the year, the final real shows of the year for those two companies. There's certainly a lot to talk about from Wednesday night. Raw on Monday had some things that Silver King kind of really needs to discuss. And I also kind of want to talk a little bit about TLC as well. We already did the Instant Analysis podcast on TLC. So if you didn't hear that, make sure you go and listen to that from Sunday night, Monday morning. You get our full breakdown of TLC. We went a little bit long on it, in fact, because there was so much for us to actually cover. But we did, you know, cover that, and we're not going to touch too much of that today. There is one topic I'm going to bring up off the top, though. But before I get to that, I'm going to go ahead and welcome in the Yingling to my craft beer, the Almond Joy to my Twix, Jack Crosby.
Folks, hello.
And if you couldn't tell, all of his were worse than the examples that I gave.
Nah, he's lying.
Far worse. I'm quite well. I mean, look, Jack, you can drink Yingling. You can have the Miller Lights. You can have the Burger King. Or you can have the Chick-fil-A. You can have the Popeye's chicken sandwich.
I had Taco Bell the other day.
That's a step up.
Love Taco Bell.
Do you like KFC?
I do. Mainly for the mashed potato. I only go to KFC when I'm craving the mashed potato.
You made it worse. You took it from, well, kind of, and then I'm like, all right, I guess there's some, in my head, I'm like, there's some things at KFC that that might be good. And then you go to the instant mashed potatoes, which are horrible.
Yeah, no, I love the KFC mashed potatoes. They're good. They're a blessing from God.
Oh my God. The potato wedges are pretty good. I don't think the mashed potatoes really stand. The wedges are decent. But no, Chick-fil-A all the way for this guy. And you know, shout out to Popeyes, because
here's the thing.
Have you had the chicken sandwich, the new one?
Oh yeah, yeah. Okay. But see, here's the thing. Up here in Pennsylvania, we are like a solid 5 to 10 years behind you guys in the South. Like, we just got our first Chick-fil-A here, like a permanent Chick-fil-A.
Sure.
I'm no joke. 2 years ago.
You're talking about in fast food. There's a lot of things in the South that are far behind. Behind the North otherwise.
Like,
yeah.
Like, we are behind the curve, especially here in my neck of the woods in Pennsylvania. We are way behind the curve.
Well, I will say that. So Chick-fil-A is, you know, by far my favorite, but that Popeye's chicken sandwich, I had the spicy one. I've had it twice now.
So good.
It is legit. Like anyone, yeah. Anyone saying no, it sucks or it doesn't compare to Chick-fil-A is wrong, because they're really close. Chick-fil-A, I already posted my ultimate final no arguments chicken takes on Twitter. You can find those. But the Popeyes is really good. I will say one thing that Pennsylvania does have, or did have for a long time, that we didn't down here in South Florida, is Wawa and Sheetz. I still haven't been to Sheetz, yeah. But they are opening a ton of Wawas down here. And I've been to them a couple times. Really great, clean, pretty decent food. The coffee's really good, even though I'm not a big coffee drinker. But they are opening one up directly across the street from our offices down here in Fort Lauderdale, and I cannot wait for that. Okay, somehow we got off on a fast food tangent. No, it was totally fine. But Jack is here, I am here, and we are here to talk professional wrestling. And the topic I really wanted to tackle at the start of the show, and I don't know that it's the biggest of the week. It's certainly not the main event. You don't hear me hitting that siren or the sound or anything like that. But it's something that bothered me coming out of TLC. You know, there's not many moments, although on this podcast, certainly I do amp it up a little bit, that actually make me legitimately angry as a professional wrestling fan. It takes some real crap. It takes the wild card rule. You know, it takes blood money in the sand, the idea that that even exists, let alone all the things that have happened and transpired from there. Kenny Omega at the end of Fight for the Fallen with the boing instead of the bang, just the corniness of that. Like, there are really, it's certain things. And one of the things is wrestling fans that turns me off from the product. And I think a long time ago, early on in her career in WWE, wrestling fans decided that Charlotte Flair was not for them. The Silver Spoon got her position because of her father, negating the fact that she's an incredible athlete, totally deserves everything that she's earned. Maybe she's been overpushed a little bit, a couple too many title reigns, sacrifice Sasha Banks a little bit. That's all fair, but that's not necessarily a reason to hate a person and try to discredit them. So coming out of TLC on Sunday, Jack, you and I at the end of the show, or at the beginning of the show, our instant analysis show, we talked about the main event and how it ended up being sloppy in large part because it was clear to us that Kairi Sane got concussed. And certainly not a good situation. Glad it seems like she's okay. It seems like she's projected to be back, I think, in the MSG show, which is awesome. You know, that's fantastic. And we went to bed. You know, we taped our instant analysis. I didn't read anything that was online. Went to sleep. I was like, hey, we did a good job, you know, covering that. And it sucked that it happened. But, the match was okay, all things considered. I wake up, and on Monday, all I read on Reddit, Twitter, replies to Kairi Sane, gave a thumb up tweet saying she's okay, read the replies to that tweet, were people trashing Charlotte Flair for being unsafe, for being a terrible coworker, so on and so forth. And the take here that people have is that Charlotte knew Kairi Sane was badly concussed, speared her anyway, slapped her in the face anyway, powerbombed her through the table anyway. And I went back and I went ahead and watched the match again, and I watched the film. And there was also, and I'm very sorry I can't give credit to this person on Twitter, but there is a, I believe it was a woman on Twitter who showed screenshots and videos of what transpired. And it was really to show how good of a job Becky did in protecting Kairi Sane. I thought that was great. But what those also showed is that Charlotte Flair, based on her circumstances and her location, did not know what happened to Kairi Sane. So really what a lot of people thought was the moment that Kairi got concussed, and it may have contributed to it, was like the exploder suplex into the barricade. And I don't actually think that's what happened. Where it seems like she got concussed was she did the insane elbow off the ring apron, crashed into the table. The table did not break. Charlotte had rolled out of the way because she was avoiding the bump on purpose, and Kairi hit her head on the table. And Becky immediately noticed, talked to Kairi, talked to the referees, made sure like Kairi was good, or not made sure she was good, but like talked to her, make sure she could continue. The referees kind of were there, didn't really do much of anything. And if we pause right there, the referee should have stopped the match or should have taken Kairi out of the match because she was clearly concussed. Charlotte Flair, after rolling off the table, rolled to the other side of the ring where the referees, at least the main one that was talking to Kairi Sane, was not an earshot of her. Did not seem to talk to her. She did not seem to know anything. Charlotte Flair stood up, saw Kairi Sane standing, and did her planned spot. Speared her, and then she slapped her in the face because that's what Charlotte Flair does many times to her opponents. She slaps them in the face.
No, it was a callback to what Kairi did to her.
It was
on Raw.
It was also a call. That's actually a really good point.
During the pinfall.
That's actually a really good point, Jack. So callback to that, but Charlotte Flair also does do that. And it was a spear outside the ring, so it wasn't a pinning combination situation.
Yeah.
She then lifts her up for the powerbomb. And yes, at that point, we, having the benefit of the 360-degree or 180-degree vision of a television screen, being able to see what is happening in front of us, we know she's concussed. We know the reason that she can't get up, you know, 90-degree angle to take the powerbomb is because she's concussed and she probably got lifted wrong, etc. For Charlotte, who has been wrestling professionally for the better part of a decade now, she just thinks, oh, this is, she didn't get, I didn't get a good lift on her. So Kyrie's there. I have to pick her up and do the powerbomb myself. I don't want to blow the move. So she powerbombs her. And people are taking it out on Charlotte like she was purposely there to hurt Kyrie Sane and is an unsafe worker. They're comparing her to Nia Jax and they're hammering her. And it is my belief that the only reason they are taking it to that extreme is because they actually have a dislike for Charlotte Flair, really more the character who's been pushed to high heaven from WWE and Vince McMahon, and not realizing, like, if that was Becky or Bayley in Charlotte's position, they would not have received anywhere near the criticism. But on top of that, the criticism is wrong because there wasn't a way for Charlotte Flair to actually know that that happened. So seeing all of this, Jack, and this is kind of what I'm getting at, it just really angered me and it disgusted me. And I don't necessarily know that Charlotte has had any opportunity or has had anyone really come out and have her back that it wasn't her fault. So I don't know if you saw the same stuff I did,
but
I kind of felt like this is something that needed to be addressed because the piling on for me just seemed so unnecessary and it legitimately angered me.
No, this is where wrestling fans really turn me off, because this is where they need to sit down and know their place. And this is why I hate this is the part where, like, wrestling Twitter, quote unquote, whatever you want to call it, this is why I hate it.
It's bad. It's vitriolic. It's really bad.
Everyone's a freaking expert.
Yeah.
Everyone who has a Twitter account who watches pro wrestling is a 15-year veteran of the business, knows all. It's annoying. Look, if there was anything that should be mildly concerned, I say mildly carefully here, the powerbomb spot, like when Charlotte was picking up dead weight,
right?
Maybe an alarm should have went off in her head, like, oh shit, something's wrong here. But even then, like you said, she didn't, maybe she thought she screwed up, like, oh man, I didn't pick her up right, so I gotta put her through here with force, like I have to make this spot look good.
There's moves that are botched all the time. It's heat of the moment. Continue. I'm sorry.
But no, looking through all the clips and everything, you're right. Like, Charlotte, no one, from what I saw, no one really relayed the information to her.
Yeah.
Like, she was doing her thing, her playing spots in the match. She was doing her job. And everything, she, for all intents and purposes, from what I saw, she didn't know Kyrie was that messed up. Whereas Becky did her, you know, Becky was doing her part because she was closest to Kyrie.
Exactly.
Charlotte was on the opposite end of the spectrum. It's the age of the internet. You got to put up with it. But no, instances like these, like when has Charlotte ever been a problem like this before?
Right.
When has Charlotte ever had, you're right. Is she guilty of being over pushed? Sure. Is she guilty of having too many title reigns? Maybe. But when have we ever come across Charlotte being a danger in the ring?
Right. And even if she has hurt someone, that happens. Like, Seth Rollins doesn't have this albatross on his shoulders because he hurt Sting, because guess what? As Sting explained to us, it didn't matter who did those moves.
It happens.
Those buckle bomb. It's going to happen. So, and people get hurt all the time. Even with Nia, I think we all agree she is, not that she's unsafe, but she's inexperienced and she's powerful. So things happen with her that she doesn't mean to happen sometimes. I don't think she punched Becky in the face on purpose to break her nose, but I think she was a bit careless with that. But I also think those are things that performers learn from. And when you're in the heat of the moment, in a TLC match, in the main event of a pay-per-view, and you're supposed to be aggressive, she is far larger than Kyrie Sane. I mean, just look at them. I mean, they're drastically different human beings. And you know what your spots are. You're carrying them out. Do you think that Charlotte Flair, when that match ended, didn't feel bad?
Like, she probably felt horrible.
Like, do people think that she was, like, happy with what she did? Not that she did anything wrong, but, like, happy to learn after the fact that the woman she was wrestling and still doing moves with was concussed? She probably felt as bad as anyone could possibly feel. And the only thing I can tell you, I don't know her personally, and we've only spoken to her, I think I've only spoken to her on two occasions. Both times, completely sweet, sincere, nice person. I've never heard a bad thing about her from anyone else. So it just really rubbed me the wrong way that people attacked her anonymously on Twitter the way they did. There's a reason why you didn't see people like Bubba or Booker T or anyone that has a podcast, that has a voice, or anyone that's a professional or a wrestler go after her that way. So I think fans, I don't like telling fans how to be fans, but you got to be better in certain situations like that. It just really bothered me. And even us, like, we're just because we have a podcast and we have the ability to share our opinions, it doesn't mean we're right about everything, but we try to keep our opinions to storylines and action. Who's a good wrestler? Who's a bad wrestler? What things we like, what things we don't like. I don't sit here and pretend to know the mechanics of what it takes going on in a ring. But what I can tell you is what I see with my eyes.
It's the simplest things. Adam, I never told you this story. Never. As long as we've known each other, I never told you this story, but I'll tell everyone now. A few years ago, we're talking maybe 6-7 years ago, I had the chance. The Wild Samoan School is just 45 minutes from here.
Mm-hmm.
I got to visit AFA and the crew down there where Dave Bautista trained, many, many others. I asked if I could take a bump in the ring. I just wanted to try it. That shit hurt. When I fell on my back in that ring, that hurt. Like, I couldn't move for 2 days. And that was like my first indication of, man, I really, truly do not understand what these people go through on a daily basis for this profession. Like, all I did was fall on my back in this ring, and I can't move out of bed.
Yeah.
Like, we don't understand their lives. And please, people, stop pretending like you do know.
Similar story to yours. I was down in South Florida. I was in high school, and I was in TV production. We decided to do a project about a local wrestling school. And we go to the school. It was run by someone super famous whose name, I swear to you, I'm forgetting right now, but I will try to remember. But we go there, and we had called ahead of time. We're like, hey, we want to do this thing. We want to tape some stuff. And the guy was totally cool. We get there. Dusty freaking Rhodes is there. Okay. And he's helping train these guys and girls. And it's not a big, it was in a warehouse. There were two rings and whatever. And I did the exact same thing as you. I asked the same thing as you. I said, hey, like, I'm a huge wrestling fan. Could I take a bump? And Dusty says, absolutely not.
See, the Samoans, they don't give a shit.
And I said, and obviously as a 16-year-old, I think I was at the time, I said, why? He goes, because it's not as easy as it looks. That was the general answer. It was, I'm not going to be responsible for you being hurt at something that all these other guys are training to actually do. I stood in the ring. I was able to, like, run, but I couldn't actually do it. He would not let me. And the other guy, again, whose name I'm forgetting, I promise I will remember, wouldn't let us, me and my friend who was there, do anything. And it was very similar. So I don't pretend, like I said, to know what they go through, but I do know what I saw. And I think this is as obvious of a situation of people wanting to pile on someone that they don't like for pretty bad reasons on their own that I've ever seen. And I just, you know, really I felt it distasteful, and it really angered me. It's one of the few things this year in wrestling. And there's been a lot of bad stuff. I mean, Hell in a Cell, Bray Wyatt, Seth Rollins, that was terrible. That really angered me. We were pissed on that instant analysis. But like Monday, reading the stuff that I saw on Twitter and Reddit, et cetera, I was pissed. And maybe it was even an overreaction for me, but I felt like it was something we needed to talk about. Okay, we're done with that. We have a lot more show left. A lot more show left. But before we get to it, you know what we have to do? We have to hear a quick word from our friends and sponsors.
With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, Jack, we're back. And as I said, plenty of show left today. So we have to get right into the main event.
This is the main event.
And I think it's pretty clear, not just because of when we're taping this podcast, but because of what happened on television Wednesday night, that the Wednesday Night Wars, NXT and AEW are the main event of this show. And I want to kind of separate them because we're of the same opinion. Straight up, NXT was better than AEW, and it was miles. It wasn't even close. But I think each show kind of deserves its own mini segment here, because to mash them together, it's not really doing service to how much I want to praise NXT or how much I want to unload on AEW.
I would, however, like to preface this whole segment by quoting someone, because you will not hear me do this often. I don't think my opinion can state what happened last night properly. I don't think Adams can either. I will rarely ever say that. I don't think either of our opinions hold this. But let me quote someone from early this morning, a man named Dave Meltzer.
Well, hold on, because I know what his opinion is, and it's basically identical to mine.
But, I mean, this coming from him, of all people.
Let's pause. Let's get to that, because I know it's about AEW. I know it's specifically about AEW.
It's about both shows. I mean, both shows.
Yes. I know exactly what you're going to say. NXT is what AEW is supposed to be.
NXT was what everyone that watched AEW wanted AEW to be, and it's not. Holy bleep.
Yeah.
From that man to end to, are you kidding me?
Yeah, and he's right, because NXT on Wednesday.
The only thing, if Brian Campbell gives that same opinion when he rejoins us, I will ascend to the heavens.
I've spoken to this morning I spoke to a very big AEW fan who said to me, yeah, there was good and bad. And at that, and just by saying that, I was like, yeah, I can also point out good and bad. There were a couple things on AEW Wednesday that I did like, no question. But when we get to AEW, which we will very shortly.
Yeah, I didn't mean Meltzer, man.
I am going to unload on AEW because it was bad. Straight up for me, it was bad. But what was good, what was great, was NXT, Jack, which I'm going to categorize top five TV show of the year, individual episode, maybe top three. From the start to the finish of the show, it was every single thing I wanted in a professional wrestling show. Really just as simple as that. We opened, obviously, with Adam Cole and Finn Balor for the NXT Championship. And I think we had an inkling, obviously, that Balor wasn't going to win the title. But what a genius decision, a booking decision from them, to bring back Johnny Gargano. It was the right timing. Have him not interfere in the match the way it would happen on WWE proper, where that person would go up to the ring, pull a leg, hit him in the head with the referee's back turned, cause a roll-up, 1-2-3. Instead, it was Balor who distracted himself by seeing Gargano, like the ghost of Gargano, and then allowing himself to get hit with the last shot from Adam Cole and the 1-2-3 for Cole to retain the title. There was no Undisputed Era interference. They allowed them to go out and give, like, a 22-minute match. It was not a 5-star match. Maybe if they had 5 or 10 more minutes, it might have gotten to that level, and the finish was more clean, you know, no Gargano involvement, because they had the ability, they had the talent, it was great. But that was like a 4 to 4.5-star match. It was a great teaser for what we might see one day between those two, and it was an awesome way to start the show with no commercials.
Yeah, that was a great television match between Finn Balor and Adam Cole. Like you said, almost a teaser. Like, we're going to see these two do this again down the line, whether it's in NXT or on Raw or SmackDown. But somewhere down the line, they're going to do this for a more extended period of time. And this was, you know, we say it all the time on this show. Predictable is not always bad. And I said it in the recap on CBSSports.com last night that I did for NXT as I was covering it. Once Finn Balor became the number one contender last week, it was obvious Johnny Gargano is going to come back. Johnny's going to cost him in some form or fashion. But that's okay. It was okay that we knew that was going to happen, that Finn wasn't going to win the title, that Johnny was going to cost him. Finn came back to NXT specifically for Johnny Gargano. Okay, then they had to pivot. They had to do the because of the injury. But now they're getting back. This got everything back on track. It was a good, I'll call it a great match.
It was a great match.
It was a great match.
Yeah.
We got a great wrestling match out of the deal. We have, now we're getting back on track with the program with Balor and Gargano. And like I also said, it's not like Adam Cole is left without challengers. Tommaso's going to come after him. Matt Riddle might come after him, but mainly Ciampa. But still, it's not like Keith Adam Lee. Cole gets left out in the cold either.
Yeah, Keith Lee is an opportunity also. I mean, there is not a dearth of challengers on NXT right now.
We got a great match, and everyone is going to go on a nice track into 2020. So it accomplished multiple things. It was a great opening segment to the show.
And let's not forget as well that NXT came out and said, we are giving you this match at the start of the show, and we're making it commercial free.
Yep.
And AEW turned around and basically said, and look, they can make all the jokes they want about WWE counter-programming them. I actually still do not believe they did with the NXT UK takeover, but whatever, teach their own. But they tried to counter-program NXT, no question, because they came right back out and said, we're going to give you a match with two of the best wrestlers in the world as part of a tag team match, just three of the best wrestlers in the world to start this show. Oh, and we're going to make it commercial free also. Like, it was blatant. But anyway, we're going to get to that. The rest of NXT, the middle part of NXT, I don't know that we need to go too in-depth on, Jack. But I will say, as you just said, and as I've said, you guys know on this show for like 2 years, better part of 2 years, predictable is not bad. No. And I would say the rest of the show, the middle part of the show, I mean, the whole show was predictable. In fact, the only match I did not predict when I saw that it was on the screen was Cameron Grimes against Kushida. I figured it was another spot for Kushida to get a big win because he had been gone for so long and Cameron Grimes was built up pretty strong. They gave Cameron Grimes the win in a awesome short match between those two.
See, I like it because people used to ask me all the time, especially when he became a thing in PWG, what's the deal with Trevor Lee? He doesn't look like much. I said, yeah. You people, you're the same people who said Bryan Danielson doesn't look like much. He'll never work in WWE. I said, but when you put Trevor in that ring, what does he end up doing every single time? He captures your attention. Doesn't matter what he looks like. That dude gets in the ring, does his work, captures your attention. I'm not saying he's Daniel Bryan or will have the imp, but it is the same thing that they used to ask of Bryan when he was in PWG and Ring of Honor and FIP. Oh, that little guy, look at him. He's lame. Look at him. Same thing with Cameron Grimes here now.
Yeah, I don't know that he, and I know you're not making the direct comparison. I don't know that he has the same ceiling, certainly, as Daniel Bryan, but he does have a high ceiling of, you know, Raw or SmackDown, mid-card dude, definitely like an IC US champion guy, challenger for the world title at some point. He is even though his character needs refinement a little bit, because it's really very much like a carnival barker from that show on HBO. I'm forgetting the name.
It's
very much that type of character, a more grimy, not trying to use his name, but a more grimy type of version of that. But right now it's kind of just, what is he really? He doesn't really cut promos. He needs all those other elements to be over. And Kushida is similar, that we know what his gimmick is. We know he's really talented in the ring, but we don't have any real reason to cheer for him outside of the one vignette they aired with him with his kid and how he, you know, fought back from injury and so on and so forth. So it was a really good match. I was surprised at the winner, but it was awesome. But every match on the show, Damian Priest, Killian Dane, did I need it again? No. Did it deliver? Yes. Io Shirai, Santana Garrett, not a great match by any means, but Io Shirai is awesome. A showcase for her. Pete Dunne, Travis Banks shocked me. I just didn't think Travis Banks was going to get that much offense. But, Jack, they are building this World's Collide event instead of TakeOver for Royal Rumble weekend.
Travis is very good. I've been watching Travis for years, too, back to his CCK days when he had to step in for Kid Lykos. Travis is a very good worker, and that's why they keep him around. Like, he's going to be one of those guys. He's going to be one of Triple H's, you know, hands that he can use in multiple. Like, Travis won't just be in the UK. You'll see him in NXT more. He can bounce around because Travis is a very good worker. And when you put him in there with Pete, I mean, Pete's Pete.
Yeah. The talent there.
That's what we say to him, but Pete's Pete.
The talent there was apparent. It was an awesome finish to that match. Just, again, I'm running through these, but you have to remember the first match of the show was 25 minutes. The last match of the show was like 25, 30 minutes. So they did the rest of it in what would be a normal NXT show. And for the rest of that to be a normal hour-long NXT was a damn good show on its own.
But we're talking about how good of a pro wrestling show NXT was last night, okay? That's why you can't ignore all the stuff that happened in the middle, because it all had a purpose.
Right.
Cameron Grimes, Kushida, feud, continue. Io Shirai, showcase against Santana Garrett, top heel enter in 2020. got to build up this Worlds Collide pay-per-view. Okay, Travis Banks, Pete Dunne.
Yeah.
Well, it all had a purpose.
And I think with Shirai in particular, depending what they do, everyone that's listening to this probably watched NXT, but I don't want to spoil what we're about to talk about. But given what happened in the main event of NXT, I wouldn't be surprised if Io Shirai is being, you know, showcased for a major role in there, because we don't know what is going to happen to former NXT Women's Champion Shayna Baszler, who lost that title in the main event to Rhea Ripley in a match, Jack, that I don't want to exaggerate, okay? But, and I've never watched Stardom, so spare me, okay? There's this awesome match in Stardom with Kana and Io Shirai. I'm sure, no doubt. But for me, an American wrestling fan, having watched American women's wrestling, or English speaking, I guess, is better, women's wrestling, for my life, that's my exposure to women's wrestling. This was a top five match I've ever seen. And that may shock a lot of people, because there's been some awesome Asuka matches. The TLC 2018 triple threat, I loved. Becky Bailey at NXT TakeOver Brooklyn. Come on, like, how are you ever going to beat that? You know, there's been Becky and Charlotte matches. Some of Ronda's matches have been among my favorites. But when you have a champion like Shayna Baszler, who has exceeded Asuka's combined reign in NXT, you have built her up to beat every opponent she has ever faced, or if she did lose to them, got the win back via Kirifuda clutch, and she's tapped them all out or put them to sleep. And you present a challenger like Rhea Ripley, a 23-year-old Aussie who is only a couple years into wrestling, who, if you go back and look at her in the Mae Young Classic, looks absolutely nothing like the woman that we saw. And I don't mean in the ring, I mean literally physically. Like, hair, makeup, eyes, like ears, everything. Totally different human being. And you want your wrestling company, the brand that you like the most, to strap a rocket to someone and send them into superstardom, then you have to like, and you have to give high esteem to the match that we saw Wednesday night between Baszler and Rhea Ripley. Some people didn't love the finish. Screw you. I thought it was perfect. I thought the match was perfect. It's not a 5-star match. Again, these ratings are meaningless. 4.5, whatever. It was an A in terms of grading matches. Hit me in the feel spot. In fact, I don't have like the real soundboard, but full on hit me in the feel spot, Jack. Rhea Ripley, obviously, what I'm getting at here is the new NXT Women's Champion escapes the Kirifuda clutch, then hits an avalanche riptide from the top rope for the win. Is anything that I just said wrong?
No, I wish I could put that entire match in a museum and just stare at it, because that match was the personification of what professional wrestling should be, and telling a story, like the story that was told in that match.
And over the last 2 months.
And the creativity. She was falling asleep in the Kirifuda clutch, but she didn't just get her arm up. She grabbed the referee by the shirt, opened her eyes as wide as she can to say, "I'm not dead."
And grabbed him by the shirt.
Do not stop this match.
And grabbed him by the shirt a moment after it looked like she went to sleep and he was about to call the match.
He was about to call.
Literally stop him in that moment.
Do not call this match.
Right.
I'm alive.
Right.
That was, what an emotional moment. I mean, you know, I said a few things yesterday in the recap. It's crazy how things can just, the stars can just align, because how long did we ask ourselves, well, Jesus Christ, who can beat Shayna Baszler? Who's going to take that title from her? If she's, you know, she would win takeover after takeover, after TV, after takeover, after TV. And we're like, oh Jesus. But then
we thought it was going to be Shirai, and then it wasn't.
We thought it might've been, you know, some people even said, well, it's going to be like a Viking Raiders thing. She's just going to vacate and go to Raw or SmackDown. But then here comes Rhea Ripley, who not only takes NXT by storm. Well, first NXT UK, then she takes NXT by storm. Then she captivates the main roster during that entire Survivor Series build. And then it's, okay, boom, there's the woman we put it on. 23 years old, doesn't matter, which is it's terrifying that she's only 23 years old. This is scary that this woman could be around this They better give her a lifetime contract. They never let her go.
She has every element.
It's terrifying.
It's incredible. She, like,
how
I don't,
good she is.
I don't even really know who to compare her to because there are so many people that at her age are nowhere near as talented as she is right now.
It's tough, man. Because her and Pete's what, 25? So Pete, like her and Pete Dunne.
Oh, and Tyler Bate too.
And Tyler Bate's 23, I think.
Yeah.
Like to think of those three. And like I voted.
And Velveteen Dream also is young.
But Rhea, I mean, you want to talk about a moneymaker. The only thing coming out of that match is, like I said, a masterpiece. I would like in a museum. I hope, and I think it will. I'm actually optimistic about this. I hope that is the lasting image I have of Shayna Baszler in NXT.
Yeah.
I don't want to see her in Full Sail ever again. I hope the lasting image is of her on her 416th day as champion, laying down for Rhea Ripley. Next time I see her, it better be on a Monday night or a Friday night.
Yeah, and we had mentioned this coming out of Survivor Series, I think, that, you know, Shayna Baszler is made for the main roster. They don't like the term main roster, WWE proper or whatever. She's made for Raw or SmackDown. She is made to be a badass there. And you know what? To be honest, so is Rhea Ripley. But they have 2 years, maybe, with her.
They have time with Rhea.
In NXT. She's
38 years old.
Yeah, where she can kind of continue honing, continue dominating NXT, lose the title once, win it back, and have a really, really nice run down there. But she's a natural. She is... Because I'm really legitimately struggling to find a comparison. I was going to say Kevin Nash in some ways, but she's far better in the ring than Nash, than Nash ever was. I kind of want to say almost a cross between like Nash and Randy Orton, meaning she has the natural instincts and abilities, but she has the presence of Nash. Just a badass who knows they're, you know, for business. And I think that's a really high compliment. She is the next wave. We love, obviously, what the Four Horsewomen, the original, are doing in WWE. At some point, whether it is to have children, whether it is to move on with their lives, whether it's to take a break, they are going to step away from WWE.
Hell, Sasha took a break already.
Right. And even if it's to legit retire, some of them are going to. If they never take a break, sooner than later, they're going to retire. Everyone does. She, Rhea Ripley, is this new wave. Bianca Belair is among them.
Io, Candice.
Io Shirai.
They're
certainly
loaded.
Yeah, Candice a little bit, I think a little bit older, but yes, Candice as well. But they have that next crop when, if you remember, I think it was 6 months ago, we were saying, maybe it was a year ago, but I think it was 6 months ago, man, this NXT women's division is pretty depleted. It's not. It's stacked. And
amazing how quick things can change.
And their decision to say, look, yeah, she's on the UK brand, but we're going to TV. You know, we're taking NXT to USA Network. We need someone over there that's going to be great. And their recognition, Jack, when you and I, and I think a lot of people thought Tony Storm would be
the chosen one. It was supposed to be Tony's spot.
We all thought it was going to be Tony Storm. She's the chosen one. She has the look. She's blonde. She's pretty. Rhea is too, but, you know, all those things. We all thought it was going to be Tony Storm. And it's Rhea Ripley. And another instance of, you know, Uncle Trips, Papa H, knowing better.
I mean, I said it either in the build-up to Survivor Series or post-Survivor Series that when Rhea was standing face-to-face with Charlotte Flair, you looked and you went, oh, man, like, this is the first woman in a while where you're like, yeah, she can kick Charlotte's ass. Like, right. If this turns in, right, she's going to kick Charlotte's ass.
And you would believe it seeing her up against Rousey or Becky. Like,
oh, yeah.
Like, Becky and Rhea staring down, you're like, ooh, like, Becky has to respect her.
I would put, you know, in a heartbeat. I would, like, they have, Rhea is one of the key pieces of the entire WWE puzzle, not just NXT, WWE.
Yeah.
And to, again, 23 years old, like, you have to say it to yourself. I said it a bunch of times last night. I said, 23. I'm watching her celebrate with the fans in the ring. I'm thinking 23 years old. Where are we going to be in 10 years when she's 33?
Right.
AJ Styles didn't make it to WWE till he was 38 years old.
Yeah, 33.
There's a 23 year old woman.
Like, she almost seems as if she's in her prime, and her prime is 10 years from now.
It's
and people are wrestling till they're 45 now, and it's just like, what's her career going to be like? So
yeah, Jesus, it's insane. And like, but like you said, she's the perfect. She's the perfect torchbearer for, can she fit on the main roster, but whatever we want to call it now, of course she can. But right now she's the perfect torchbearer for the NXT women's division as they're still an infant on television.
Yeah.
And take on that loaded roster for now. And then maybe I think by next year at this time, we're talking about Rhea Ripley on Raw or SmackDown.
Yeah. And people
by next year at this, I think we are.
It's possible. She'll
lose that title by then.
That's possible. I do think she probably has a little bit longer, though. I do think we see her, you know, leading the Survivor Series team again, or being in that women's match at Survivor Series, being in the Royal Rumble. You're going to see a lot of her when crossover opportunities do present themselves. And I think it just goes to show you NXT really is set up for the future. And I think it should also make people feel better about WWE proper as well. So, Jack, we've now spoken about the greatness of NXT, not really just Wednesday night, but in general. And I feel a little vindicated. Look, NXT is my product of choice. And I think you guys know listening to this show, guys and girls, AEW is not my favorite. But I've watched every episode to this point, Jack, and I've enjoyed them. I think there's been a full hour at minimum in every AEW show that's entertained me, that makes me feel like this is a product you need to be watching, even if you don't love every single instance of it or every little thing that happens. But Wednesday night, Dynamite, like, I would be disingenuous if I told you that I felt anything other than hatred. I watched a 2-hour show. It certainly did not help that I watched it immediately after NXT, which, again, top 3, top 5 show of the year, TV show. But I watched it, and there were very few things I could point out as legitimate positives. And you read the quote from Dave from Meltzer at the beginning of this conversation. And it's exactly how I feel. When AEW was announced basically 12 months ago, very, very close, about 2 weeks shy, on this podcast, Brian and I theorized what it was going to be. And prior to that, when BC was talking about a revolution in professional wrestling, it was more along the lines of NJPW starting an American company or you know, joining forces with Ring of Honor to bring Tanahashi and Okada and all those great guys over for really high-quality wrestling. Because at that time, over a year ago, we were heavily invested in NJPW. And the entire goal of being an alternative, which is what AEW claims to be, to the main roster, meaning WWE, I'm sorry, is to be different, is to be the opposite of what WWE is. No corny stuff. The in-ring action matters. Fewer rematches. All these little things. But what AEW has given us largely has been, and I've said this before, another version of WWE, a WWE-like product, maybe a crossover between WWE and the action that we like from NXT, but just not WWE. So that the people, the fans who got turned off from WWE, that hate WWE with vitriol for one reason or another, can say, yeah, I'm still a wrestling fan. F you, WWE, I'm an AEW fan. And I didn't fully believe that. It was just kind of an inkling I had. But they hammered that home to me on Wednesday night with Dynamite, because what we wanted AEW to be, Brian and I, and apparently Dave, and I know you as well, is what NXT actually is. NXT is the difference maker in terms of a brand in this space. It is the stark contrast from Raw and SmackDown. It is action, more adult storylines, things that actually matter, get resolved. It's clear cut. The storylines are easy to understand. Things don't get changed at the last minute. With AEW, Wednesday night show, Jack, was an absolute mess. And I don't mean that from a production standpoint, although there were plenty of those flaws as well. I just did not enjoy 75 to 80% of what I saw on TV.
No, it really is true. I mean, you'll never hear me give Dave Meltzer credit for anything, but he's right. Like, NXT did AEW on Wednesday night better than AEW. That's a true statement.
It's not. No, it's not. NXT did NXT.
No, NXT did AEW better than before NXT became a live product on television. That is what AEW said they were going to be. Wins and losses were going to matter. The matches were going to matter. The storylines were going to matter.
NXT did NXT.
That's
though.
What it was.
NXT did NXT. They were the best version of themselves. NXT gave us a light version of a takeover. Not even as much as they did on their debut episode on October 2nd. This was even, not October 2nd, whatever that day was, that first Wednesday in October where they went head to head. That was like a real takeover. This was a light version. But NXT gave us the NXT product. What the elements, though, of the NXT show on Wednesday, you're right, Jack, were what AEW promised in their press conferences they were going to be about. It's all about the action, all about things mattering. And the only thing that you could maybe say that AEW accomplished on Wednesday was they put over some new people. But AEW is doing that to the detriment of their stars.
We voiced our opinion and we said, hey, Cody, hey, Tony Khan, this Dark Order stuff sucks. They were like, all right, yeah, you know what? You're right. We kind of goofed on this. So here, we're going to revamp it.
And it's awesome. So all of a sudden.
And the last few weeks, we're like, all right, you know what? You guys listen to us. That, like, this is cool. I like this. It's not a main event angle. It's not a main event faction. You presented them as this main event force over your company. You're like, whoa, 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 too much, too much. You went too far.
While you already have the Inner Circle, which is, you know, objectively pretty awesome, with Chris Jericho, the best frontman you could possibly have. You have the Elite, technically, which aren't really together anymore, but still always seem to have each other's backs whenever necessary. And you're right, Jack. You also have this Nightmare Collective, which is...
They went too far!
Total garbage. But it seemed like they were salvaging the Dark Order. It was like, wow. They're doing... They still have the stupid masks. But... It's okay.
But that was what we asked of them. We said, hey,
but it's okay.
Fix this. And WWE, a lot of times, when we say fix something, they say, nah, screw you.
Right.
Where Cody said, all right, I'll fix it. Don't worry about it.
And it really seemed like they were going in that direction. But then they, not just do they go with the masks, they go with more masks. And they tried to introduce two new members that, and Jack, you're the independent wrestling fan here.
I don't mind the Beaver Boys being...
No. You may not mind. Jack, who the hell are they?
But that's AEW's job to explain that in the coming weeks on television.
They mentioned them by name, and by putting it as the main event angle, they made it seem like those introductions were important, that they were a major
vignette last week.
A major storyline turning point. That's fine that they were in the vignette. But I don't know who they are as a fan. I am.
Well, that you got to give them time to explain in the coming weeks.
No, you don't, because Jack.
And if they,
no,
yeah, you do.
No, you don't, Jack, because that was the go home show for 2019. They don't have a show next week, so they're not even immediately following up on this angle. If you look at the final shot of NXT and AEW last night, the final shot that we're going to see for the year 2019, you have Rhea Ripley being crowned as the new greatest woman in NXT with a ring filled of fans and superstars in this iconic moment. And then on the other brand, you have Kenny Omega, who I'm going to talk about what happened to him yesterday. But you have Kenny Omega and Cody and the Young Bucks and all these guys trashed in the middle of the ring by a bunch of dudes wearing black with goofy masks on. After introducing two new guys who no one knows, even casual fans, who you're trying to get. You're trying to get the lapsed fan to watch your product. And your last moment is a guy sticking his hand in Matt or Nick Jackson's mouth, I'm not sure who it was, kind of getting blood, doing a claw gesture with like 18 other dudes, all of whom are wearing masks, having just beaten down a bunch of your biggest stars. But again, the people wearing masks aren't Chris Jericho Jake Hager.
And I said before this, I said it was okay. Like, they were doing a good job of revamping what the Dark Order actually is and explaining to us who they are. But it's not a main event. Like, they killed the executives of the company. Whoever would know, they're all the main events. They're the top tier stars. Like, that shouldn't have happened.
I almost get this weird suspicion in my head that, like, they're going to have the Elite and the Inner Circle team up for the greater good of AEW against the Dark Order. Like, I just have that in my head. And even if that's not happening, I shouldn't have that in my head, because the Dark Order is not something I should care enough about to be this angry about. But that was just the end of the show. They start the show with a tag team match, Lucha Bros against Kenny Omega and Hangman. And it was a good match. I mean, they're all four very talented wrestlers. Certainly, again, as I said before, three of the best in the world. Kenny takes the pin. Again. Fine. You're still building this angle of Kenny losing matches and being the cause, the root of all evil, whatever, whatever. Kenny gets pinned. He then starts a shoving match with Hangman Page, and the crowd is into it. I was into it. I'm like, oh,
they're doing a good job with the Hangman stuff.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, this is pretty cool. And then right as it's getting started, they put Pac on the screen, and they say, and they have him saying, hey, I'm going to attack Michael Nakazawa. And Kenny's like, you know, this thing that with Page can wait, and that's okay. That makes sense. I'm going to go find Pac and save Nakazawa, my best friend. First of all, they had a hot moment in the ring that they cut away from, which is not good to do in any situation. But okay, they had a reason. Then they go to commercial break. And as Kenny is looking for Nakazawa, he gets attacked by the Lucha Bros, who just beat him in the ring and have no reason to attack him again. So now he's lost a match, been attacked by the Lucha Bros backstage. He's still looking for Nakazawa. We never see Nakazawa. We never see CPAC. We get zero resolution. Then Omega comes out at the end of the show to save the Young Bucks and gets his ass beat again. I think a lot of people who are just kind of getting back into wrestling or are watching AEW and they don't know Kenny Omega, first of all, he looks like a geek to them. But
yeah, he's a dork.
But as Jack Crosby and Adam Silverstein, and I'm going to speak for Brian Campbell here, who know Kenny Omega as arguably the best wrestler in the world and what Brian would say maybe the greatest of all time, which I vehemently disagree with, you have seen this guy be a shell of himself in AEW. And I'm not saying he needed to win the title right away. I'm not saying he needed to be the number one contender for Chris Jericho's championship right away. He didn't need to be. But you are, it's like opposite Hogan, where Hogan always had to win in WCW. Omega, like, never wants to win. He never wants to get on top. Or they're booking him that way. And they are taking the greatest wrestler in the world, arguably, and making him look like just another guy.
Yeah, like, even with the Bucks, too. Like, when AEW started and, like, these guys got their executive titles, we're like, all right, but you guys can't shoot yourselves to the top. And in that respect, they've done well. The Bucks aren't the tag team champions. Kenny Omega isn't anywhere near the AEW world title. But at the same time, you can't make yourself look like a bunch of losers. Kenny especially. That's why I make that comment I made on the show months ago to Brian of love this comment or hate it, I don't care. I think if Kenny signed with WWE, he would have been better off. Everyone gets all mad at me. I said, it's not the Bucks. If Kenny signed with WWE, he would be better off. Instead, like, good for him. I'm sure he's paid handsomely. He's obviously paid handsomely. Great. Good for him. He gets to be his dorky self on TV. But it's just, it's not entertaining. It's not doing anything for me. It's making him look stupid. I hate that I have to sit here and wonder, and I know this may sound crazy to people, what would Vince McMahon have done with Kenny Omega?
He would have been champion.
Or, oh, by now, there's no doubt, a doubt in my mind. Or if he would have been on a faster track than AJ.
Or if not champion, he would have been like IC champ and like heavily pushed.
Because to get him, they would have had to pay an insane amount of money.
Right.
To get him first off. So they're not just going to flush that money down the toilet. Like when people say they would have ruined Kenny. No, they wouldn't.
Yeah.
Because the investment in him would have been insane.
Yeah, they didn't.
So they had to treat him like a top star.
People, for like, whenever they say like WWE is going to ruin someone, it depends on the person. Like, okay, did WWE ruin Bobby Lashley? Maybe. I mean, Lashley's ceiling is only so high anyway. Certainly he was better seemingly in Impact than he's been since returning to WWE, but ruin, whatever. Did WWE ruin AJ Styles? No. Maybe you liked him a little bit more in NJPW. Maybe you liked certain things he did better when he was far younger, by the way, in Impact. But AJ Styles is as over as anyone in the world as a professional wrestler.
And trust me, WWE has, like, they're like, how do you, like, for example, how do you put EC3 on TV and he's a mute?
Right. Like,
who does that?
But
like,
again,
that's where you want to take WWE by the neck and just say, what is wrong with you?
Yes, and there are people they ruin. But when they invest in someone, they're not going to, they didn't ruin Ronda Rousey. You know what I mean? Like,
to that point, the Bucks in WWE, no, I don't think it would have worked.
I agree.
It would have worked for a little bit. Cody? Yeah, Cody would have worked because they would, depending on
Cody, like,
I do think
Cody, you have natural angles with Triple H and Vince and righting wrongs.
Yeah. Like the Young Bucks, don't think so. Adam Page, reportedly, when they were doing, because they did talk to WWE, because they're smart businessmen before they did this AEW stuff. They talked to Vince. They met with them. Adam Page, they told him, you're going to NXT. And I mean, I guess, you know, if he's being separated from the group, you know, he would like, so
I'll tell you what, I like Page. I think he has a great future. I put him in NXT. I wouldn't put him on the main roster.
I would have put him too, but I also don't blame those guys for saying, look, he's if you're going to put us on Raw or SmackDown, he's got to come with us. And they're like, no, he's going to go to NXT, probably be the NXT champion. And you guys are going to go to Raw or SmackDown. Right. But the point being, it's we're seeing some examples of them having creative control not being a good thing necessarily.
Yeah, it's not. And I kind of want to transition that into Cody, too, because I do think they made the right decision ultimately with Cody being the biggest face right now. He's the most over. The fans love that he helped start this company. So he has like the real life appreciation from the fans, even more than appreciating Kenny just being an awesome wrestler. Kenny hasn't really done much to help the fans, I guess, is the best way to put it, other than be awesome, which he is. So Cody has that. But, and I should note also, Cody is among my most improved wrestlers of 2019. He won, not that I mean anything, I don't mean anything, but he won my respect over the course of this year. I bought into the 3-star Cody, thought he wasn't a very good in-ring wrestler, proved me wrong. So I am now a Cody fan. I actually really like Cody. But it is apparent when you watch AEW Dynamite or any of their pay-per-views, they don't just see him as the number one face. They see him as the number one overall star in the entire company and push him and promote him as such to potentially an even more insane degree than Roman Reigns in WWE. Not all time, but at least in 2019. And I say that when Cody makes his entrance, Jack, it's like 5 minutes of fireworks. He gets the thing lifted up for him. There's smoke. It's like the Messiah has come.
I don't mind it, though, because it gets the reactions. So I actually don't mind it.
But it is so over the top where you have all these other superstars. Sorry to use that term, I'm talking AEW. Including Jericho. Including Cody. Including Moxley, even. Pat Pack. Where they come to the ring, and it's just like, oh, it's another guy. But so Cody... But Cody gets these grand entrances, and it's not just at the pay-per-views. What I find really funny is that Cody seems to have made his public enemy number one, Triple H. That's how they treated Triple H. That's how WWE at WrestleMania every year treats Triple H with these grand entrances that not everyone else gets. And it's really funny to me that Cody seems to be in that same spot.
Nah, I don't read that much into it. I mean, I see the comparisons. I do. And yeah, there was the throne breaking and everything like that. But no, I don't mind, because those, like, when those lights go down, those fans go bonkers. They lose their minds because they know Cody's coming. So if I'm a production guy, I'm going to say, well, keep doing it. Keep doing it. And Kenny gets the loads of fireworks too.
Oh, he gets a couple shooters in the air. Cody gets like fireworks, smoke. It's in Jack. If you watch him back to back, it's drastically different.
But if you're getting the reactions, why would you not keep doing it?
I'm just saying, it's so over the top for me. And
if you were in charge of AEW and you were sitting backstage and Cody does that entrance, you hear those people, you go to the next town the next week, you hear it again. Are you going to stop it because you say, it's a little too over the top?
No, I would trim down.
I'd keep going. No, I'd keep going.
No, I would trim it down because it's so much greater. Not the reaction. The entrance is so much more dramatic and greater than everyone else. Everyone else is dwarfed by comparison.
No, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
But again, you'd get the same reaction with half as much. You would.
Nah.
The thing would still lift up. You'd still get the smoke.
I like Cody's entrance.
You'd still get a couple. No. I really like Cody's entrance, but I don't like anyone else's. This is what I'm trying to say. It is so much better and greater.
Well, what else doesn't help is they still haven't fixed the entrance music problem they have in that company either.
And Cody's is really good. His entrance music.
But Cody's is really good. Yeah. Jericho, well, I mean, Jericho is him.
Yeah.
Like Darby's is good.
I like the Lucha Bros.
Oh, the Lucha Bros is good.
Yeah.
The Bucks, obviously, good.
Nah, I don't like that. But, okay.
But then, like, they took, like, I mean, Janela has a problem because they ripped his musical. He's trying to get the rights to his song back.
Yeah. So, that was a fine match. Didn't have much issue. Real quick, like, seriously, 5 seconds. Brandy, Nightmare Collective, awful. Don't want to be anywhere near it. Terrible. I'm not even going to let you respond. I see you shaking your head no, so I know you agree with me. on that note, Chris Statlander, glad they're pushing her, thinks she has a big future. Alien gimmick sucks. The touching Tony Schiavone's nose and then wagging her finger in Brandy's face.
I thought that was good.
It was good. It was a good compare.
I was entertained by that.
It was a good, not disposition. What's the word I'm looking for? Where like you put two things back to back. Anyway, we're going on long, but it was a nice, you know, juxtaposition. Thank you. There's the word. It was a nice juxtaposition between Schiavone and her. But the alien gimmick, like that's an independent gimmick. That's not something that is going to sustain this awesome in-ring talent in Statlander or someone who has the potential to be. And then you see her and you see Rio. And the drastic difference between her and Rio is even greater than like Charlotte and Kairi Sane. I don't even know what they're doing with the women's division, but nothing on Wednesday night, Jack, gave me any hope that it's improving. Aside from Statlander being there, who is awesome.
I will die on this hill, and I think they booked that division around Kylie Rae, and when whatever happened, everything went off the rails when she left that company. They booked, I'm serious, I think that they framed that entire division around her, and when she up and left, I don't think they knew what to do. I think they had one plan in place, and everything just right off the rails.
That's interesting because I think a lot of people would have said that their plan was Britt Baker, and then it got blown up when she got
hurt. No, it was Kylie. When she got hurt. They were positioning Kylie as the face of that women's division. Britt was but Kylie, as far as the active in-ring performer, she was going to carry that torch, and then whatever happened, she's gone, and they just went, oh, crap, what do we do now?
Regardless, they have 0.0.
0.0
of my attention with the women's division. The thing I really did legitimately like from AEW was the Jungle Boy Chris Jericho match.
Yeah.
Quick aside, I have zero issue with Jim Ross calling him Jungle Boy Jack Perry, because at some point this guy is going to be something in AEW or somewhere, and Jungle Boy as a gimmick is not going to last forever. So call him Jack Perry. Let people know he's Jack Perry. The name has gravitas because of his father. JR, keep doing it. I'm on your side with that. It was a 10-minute match, basically. It was not beat the clock necessarily, but you know, basically Jericho challenged him, you can't last 10 minutes with me. What I loved was not only did it go to a draw, which was the right booking, because it doesn't make Jericho look bad, but that they came back and explained later on, Excalibur and Tony Schiavone came on during the next match, that it was booked as a draw. So there's no win, there's no loss. They explained it to the crowd. It's the exact opposite of something they did on Raw, which we're going to talk about later in the show, that really seriously bothered me. So I loved that. What I didn't like was Jericho begs for 5 minutes more. They ring the bell, and the referee's like involved, like ready to keep going, and then they just kind of ditch it. And he leaves the ring with his title, and there's no count out. They then said there was no second. The match never restarted, so there was no second decision. It just kind of felt like, why do that? She just beat the crap out of him. You know, you're pissed that it was a draw. Beat him up. So that I didn't like. But the rest of the match, the 10 minutes, I thought was awesome.
No matter how bad a Dynamite episode might be or how off, it will never get old watching Chris Jericho work his ass off to get these unknown people over in front of a mainstream audience. That is the best thing about AEW right now, bar none, in their short existence on television. Chris Jericho is going above and beyond to make these people matter. And I love every single week, and last night with Jungle Boy, every single week Chris is doing something, whether it's one of the Inner Circle members or an opponent. It's the best thing AEW has right now, is that Chris Jericho isn't packing it in. He's not just taking a paycheck. He loves this and he wants to see this succeed. And the dude is working his ass off to get it done.
Yeah, Jericho has been fantastic. I think there's no bigger winner career-wise and just really just day week to week than Chris Jericho in AEW.
And you had every right to assume back in January when this company was announced that he was just going to take a huge paycheck and be lazy. You had a right to assume that.
I was going to say you're clarifying you. No. You mean a person. Anyone
who did, they had a right to believe that. Him at his age, where he is in his career, But it is the exact opposite. He is trying so hard to make this a thing, and it's awesome to watch.
Yeah, no, it really is. And I, like I said, I think that was really the bright spot. And I'm being trying to be fair here with AEW. But, you know, honestly, to kind of close on AEW, you know, what Meltzer said, and I was surprised you brought it up because we, you know, we don't talk too much Meltzer here. But
I had to. It's
but, you know, but he really did nail it. He also said, I think I saw a headline. I did not read or listen to what he said. So I don't want to misquote him, but he said the AEW reached a tipping point on Wednesday night, potentially. And I agree with that as well. This was a show that totally turned me off. It's not that I'm not going to watch. I'm going to watch every episode of AEW, not just because we have the podcast, but there's people there I like, and there are things that are positive that I like from AEW. But as we go further in this NXT AEW war, Jack, I've always been, you know, Team NXT. It's just it's my number one brand in all of wrestling. But to me now, where I was giving AEW credit a few weeks ago, I was like, you know what, Raw is kind of there, you know, head to head with AEW. For me, Raw, even though this week I didn't love, it has taken that number two spot, and AEW is hanging out in third. And if they keep doing these type of WCW Nitro bookings and characters and storylines that turn people off of Nitro, the gimmicky stuff, the weird stuff, the booking that doesn't really make much sense, taking your biggest characters, your biggest stars, and kind of, you know, tearing them down some ways, some purposeful, some not, they're gonna lose me at some point. And I think they're gonna lose a lot of people. So they need to really be careful that they hear what people are saying. From this episode, they now have 2 weeks to book that January 1st show.
And they will.
They need to fix it. And I think they will. I agree.
I'm going to tell people right now. Yes, last night sucked. Plain and simple, it sucked. It was terrible. Told BC that this morning. It sucked. But I do have optimism that because they do listen. They listen to the criticisms. And especially if they hear Dave Meltzer saying, hey, that was crap. They're going to be like, okay, I think we need to write the ship.
Well,
here.
He's the Pied Piper. So,
but you know, January 1st is in the Daily's Place Amphitheater, where Fight for the Fallen was, which it was an incredible venue to hold pro. Like, I'm excited to see that on TNT.
That show wasn't because, very good, but the venue was cool. Yeah,
because we have bowl games January 1st, obviously. So I won't get to watch Dynamite until probably the day after. But excited for that, and I think that they're going to right the ship, but you cannot let happen what happened last night again.
Yeah, I'm completely with you.
Can't do that. That was, last night was, especially when you are being pushed by your competitor with such a great show. You turn in something like that, that you can't do that.
It was clearly a stark contrast between what NXT gives us regularly and what they gave us Wednesday and what AEW gave us Wednesday.
Yeah.
It was night and day. And by the way, people, you know, by the time this comes out, usually the ratings come out or shortly thereafter. I expect both shows to be way down because of the impeachment. So I don't think you're going to see a big number from either of them. And I don't necessarily know that NXT is going to win the ratings because people may have just decided, those that watch, to tune into AEW after all the NXT audience does skew older. But from a critical standpoint, there is zero question which show has been better, and zero question for me which show was better on Wednesday. Now, something I failed to mention off the top of the show, and this is completely my fault. Hopefully you saw it in the headline of this podcast, and hopefully you are reading it in the description as well. But we have a huge guest on today's show, and that guest is former WWE champion Kofi Kingston, now the tag team champion, SmackDown tag team champion, along with Big E and the New Day. We spoke to him about a lot of topics coming out of his title run, his entire 2019, which is just an incredible year for him, and also about his new podcast, The New Day, Feel the Power, which you can listen to wherever you find podcasts. Wherever you're listening to this show, you can listen to their show as well. And BC was 100% right last week or 2 weeks ago. I forgot when. He said he listened to their episodes. He really liked it. I finally got around to doing it. The show is 3 episodes in. It's awesome. The first two are really funny. They're about kind of some backstage stuff, them breaking down the 60 names they had on a list before they ended up choosing New Day and how bad most of them were. And the third episode was very serious. It was about Xavier Woods' injury
and you know how he's doing coming back from it, and major injuries that have also been suffered by Big E and Kofi Kingston throughout their careers. Big E even kind of mentions he didn't have a pain pill problem, but he was taking a lot at a period of time because he was hurt, and he realized how others could become addicted to them. So it was a really eye-opening episode of a podcast. They're very short, 30 to 45 minutes, and definitely worth a listen. But what I want you to listen to first is Kofi Kingston himself speaking with myself and Jack Crosby here on the State of Combat podcast. And after this interview, we're going to recap a little bit of Kofi, and we're going to talk WWE Raw from Monday night before we get out of here. So take it away. Welcoming into the CBS Sports State of Combat podcast, it is the Kofi Kingston. And Kofi, we say the now because in addition to all those Intercontinental Championship, U.S. Championship, Tag Team Championship accolades, you are now a former WWE champion, Kofi. It's been fantastic watching you over this these past 6 months, but really the last 11 years. What has this time been like for you coming out of that championship run into your role back in tag team wrestling with New Day?
It's been awesome, man. This year has been so incredible in so many different ways. I mean, we could have an hour-long discussion on how serendipitous the winning the WWE Championship was. But, yeah, man, it was just crazy to be able to achieve my childhood dream, number one. There are so many people on this planet who have dreams as kids. When we become adults, we just cast those dreams by the wayside for whatever reason. For me, I would always pretend when I was fantasizing about being a WWE superstar, I would always – you know, fantasize about matches at WrestleMania for the WWE title. So that was my exact dream, and that actually came true. And it obviously, like, I had a lot of help from Woods and from E in a lot of ways. I say that I was the one wearing the title, but it was all of us that were the champion, because without those guys, I would not have ever had the opportunity to be in that situation, you know? So just incredible being at WrestleMania, going up against a guy like Daniel Bryan, who was in the same position that I was in 2 years earlier, and now he's in the reverse role as the bad guy, calling me the B-plus player. And it was awesome, man. It was so great. And my family being there, and I always say, like, you know, you don't quite know why things are happening until they happen. So for my first WWE title win to come with my kids at an age, you know, at an age where they can, you know, can appreciate it and understand what was happening and be in the ring in front of 85,000 people and throw t-shirts out into the crowd. Like, I'm so grateful for that moment, to share that moment with my wife. And she sacrificed so much for me to be in this position. And my dad and brother were at WrestleMania for the first time too. So, it's like I said, man, I could go on and on about just that aspect of 2019, but it was incredible. And then on top of that, becoming a 7-time WWE champ, tag team champion once again, it's awesome, because it's an example of the standard that we keep ourselves to. Myself, Woods, and E, we always want to make sure to be pushing ourselves forward, to continue to climb the mountain, to always put forth the best product and the highest quality of matches that we can possibly put forth. You know, we just keep on marching, the train keeps moving, and we keep climbing the mountain. So it's been an incredible 2019, to say the least. And we're looking forward to making it even more special, because it's not over yet. We still got a couple weeks. So, you know, we got to keep on pushing.
Absolutely. Now, last time we spoke, you had just come back from Ghana. Obviously, that was an incredible trip for you and meant a lot, I'm sure, to all of them, not to mention WWE Universe here in America as well. And one of the things we discussed extensively was representation, how much the title meant not only for you and for other superstars like you, but for fans watching WWE, telling them basically, hey, you can do it too. So I'm not going to ask you about the reign ending, the title reign ending, because I know you've been asked about that a million times, about your thoughts with Brock and all that. But what I am going to ask you is, what did you feel like when it ended? Was it kind of a, well, you know, that was that, I had my opportunity? Or do you now feel like something has actually been changed, whether it's creatively in WWE, the type of angle and storyline that worked, you know, sending you to that position? Do you feel confident now that, other people like you, like Big E, maybe Andrade, et cetera, maybe have a greater opportunity now than they did previously.
Of course, yeah. And I've always said too that, like, it's one thing to say that anything is possible in theory, right? If it hasn't happened, but it's another thing to actually say that anything is possible because it has happened. In fact, you know, so, the fact that I was able to win the WWE Championship and, just the social media, post alone was enough confirmation to know how impactful that moment was on, people of color and honestly on anybody who's been in the situation, but particularly people of color, because, you know, it hadn't really happened before. You hadn't had somebody that was born in Africa that was, a main title holder, you know? So the fact that I was able to do that and provide that motivation, I mean, even people always come up to me all the time and they're still talking about it, you know? So, yeah, I definitely felt that the impact was true. And that was always the point, was I've always wanted to inspire people to go out and do positive things. And even if you could feel like 1/10 of the good vibes that I feel as a WWE superstar, as a person, as a human being who has gone out and reached for their dreams and achieved that dream, then you'll be so happy with your own life, because I just want people to feel that, you know? And even if you have to hang in there and things look bleak and you don't think that you can do it or it's never been done before, there's still a possibility. And the only way that that possibility is going to happen is if you yourself keep on pushing yourself. So, even though the title reign ended, the impact that was felt was not, you know, you can't, I feel like no one can ever take that away. And, from a creative aspect, I think that, people, you know, hopefully, it shines a little bit of light on the way that storylines can be written, like you said, because this wasn't the intention. If Ali doesn't get hurt, we're not having this conversation, like period, point blank, it's not happening, you know? So, the fact that, I'm just glad that creatively that, that Vince and, you know, the company decided to go with what the people wanted, because there've been a lot of times where, the people wanted to go in one direction, clearly by their voices out there. And for whatever reason, we decided to go a different direction. But again, just to see the impact that this storyline has had on real life, you know, and, I think that, people who have the quote unquote, the pen, realize that, and hopefully it influences them to write some compelling storylines that really, you know, that capture that sense of passion and things of that nature. So, I'm just trying to keep on moving forward. I've said it in a bunch of different interviews as far as the way that the title reign ended. I could sit around and mope and whine and complain and bicker about the way it went down, or I could march forward and continue to make history. And that I've chosen the latter, to do that, because that's really what matters, man. Like, if I'm going on social media and complaining, that's not what changes anything. I'm just trying to promote change. And like I said, influence people's lives in a positive way. And you can't do that when you're in a negative space. So it's all positivity in a very real, you know, not beyond a character perspective, just in a real life perspective, and just pushing forward and always climbing the mountain to the top.
Sure. Now, I know Big E was pretty vocal, at least on the After the Bell podcast, about, you know, how that ended. And I'm not really going to talk about that. But what I do want to say is there seems to be, and you've been in WWE long enough to know this, there's trends, right? People really get behind Dolph Ziggler, want him to win the title. Daniel Bryan, you, it's happened. I feel like for a long time, it's kind of been simmering, and I'm not trying to be a wedge driver, don't worry. But I feel like it's been simmering for, I feel like it's been simmering for Big E a little bit. And I think at TLC on Sunday, people really got that feeling again of, man, this maybe should be the next guy. Do you guys have those conversations? I don't want you to speak for him, whether he's frustrated or not necessarily, but do you feel the same way that this is that type of guy that can have the rocket strapped to him, as they like to say, go grab that brass ring and maybe be the next guy to break out into that singles, you know, heavyweight championship picture?
Of course. And I think that when you talk to E, he's very modest about it. You know, he'll always say he just shows up to work and does what he's supposed to do. But I think we all know, and we wouldn't be having this conversation if we didn't know E's potential to be able to carry the load He's phenomenal on the mic. He is funny. He can be intense. He is well spoken. He's just an all around good dude. And I like you said, man, I think it's a matter of time. You know, when the opportunity is right, he will definitely be somebody that can take the bull by the horns and lead the charge, you know. So we'll see. We'll kind of see like what happens as time goes on. But yeah, he is definitely a guy that is more than capable of being able to be the face of the company and lead. And myself and Woods would be right there beside him, supporting him the whole time, holding him up, you know, and pushing him forward, because that has always been the philosophy of our group, is always to push our brothers to the top. So we'll see what happens. We never know. Like I said, when it happened for me, it wasn't supposed to. So yeah, who knows?
Right. So
we'll see.
Latest news coming out is that you re-signed a 5-year deal with WWE, and then that there's identical deals with Big E and Xavier Woods, or ex-Xavier Woods, as he prefers people to say. Identical deals, identical money, apparently, all that type of stuff. On Backstage Tuesday night, you had Booker T and Christian kind of saying, hey, you know, Kofi maybe, or Big E, or whoever, you guys should have looked out for number one, gone, get as much money as you possibly can. What kind of, I know you guys are close, you're going to be a group forever, you're not going to get split up, we've had that conversation, but what made you guys kind of all say, yeah, we need to get these identical deals?
Well, that has always been the philosophy of the group. And, you know, as far as like looking out for number one, like that's been the mentality of a lot of different like groups or factions. And that's why you see them kind of fall apart. Right. But for us, like we realize how strong we are. The bond that we have is special. We're not like the other factions that you have out there. And it was important for all of us to, you know, get paid and get paid well. And to do it as a group, because that's really the only way that we want to do it. And that's not to say that, like, you know, we can't go off and have different singles runs, or, you know, someone doing the King of the Ring, you know, Woods, that's one of his dreams, is to be King of the Ring.
Right.
So to have him that, while all of us, we don't have to break up to do that. We can all look out for each other. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's a lot of food to go around, and we can all eat and eat well. So let's do that. You know what I mean? Like, if you have, you're stronger in a group than you are by yourself. So I never really understood the mentality of wanting to, you know, like go your own way and look out for yourself. I mean, this is what's worked for us. And, you know, like, yeah, like you said, man, it was just important for us to all be able to, you know, to sign that deal together. And obviously we are united. We've been a united front for the better part of 5 years. And we'll continue to do that, man. That's the only way that we want to do it. So, yeah, that's the route that we chose. So, and it worked out well for us.
Kofi, as a follow-up on the contract there, at 38 years old and one of the strongest veteran presences in WWE right now, have you given any thought as to maybe this is the last contract you will sign as a full-time performer? And to follow up on that, have you also given any thought to where your future lies after you are done with in-ring competition, be it a producer or a trainer down at NXT, anything of that ilk?
Oh, geez, I really have no idea, man. All of those are options, and it's a little daunting to think about that and jumping right into like a creative role or an agent role after having been here for like, you know, at that point it'll almost be, oh my God, like over 15 years. My math is terrible. It'll be over 15 years. Yeah. My gosh. So to think about like jumping right back in behind the scenes, it's a lot to think about, because I don't even know what's going to happen next week. So, I don't know, man. I don't know. I'm not sure. My goal has always been to kind of save as much money as possible and have the options to do whatever it is that I want to do. So, that's the track that we're on right now. And, it's a lot to consider. I mean, even in that creative role, you would have to move up to Connecticut. All those writers and everybody live in Connecticut. Unless you go down to NXT, you live in Florida. Right now I live in Texas. So to uproot my family and have to move, I don't know. It's a lot to think about at this point in time. But what I am concentrating on right now, like I said, is just kind of climbing that mountain and continuing to put forth just the best product possible. And then when it's all said and done, we'll kind of cross that bridge when it comes.
Well, you got another project anyway, that you're working on right now. The New Day, Feel the Power, a little bit of podcast inception here. Kofi, three episodes in, man, this is a dynamite show. I mean, first couple episodes, downright hysterical. Last episode, super serious, but really gave us a lot of insight into what injuries are like, you know, obviously for Xavier Woods and also for Big E and you over the course of your careers. How did this podcast start? Is this something you've been pushing WWE for? Is it something they approached you guys about? Where did it start and where do you see it going?
Well, it's funny because it's not like an elaborate story as far as the beginnings of it, man. And I appreciate all the feedback that, you know, the positive vibes that you gave with that, because that seems to be the general consensus, is that everyone likes what they've heard so far. But literally, we were at a TV taping one day, and Mark Carano from Talent Relations came up to us and said he wanted to meet with all of us as a group. And then Brian Terwilliger, who works heavily with Up, Up, Down, Down, was with us too. And they brought us the idea of a podcast, because WWE was going to be starting this podcast network. And they wanted to know if we wanted to have a show. And then we just said yes. And then that was it. So, it's something that, like, we enjoy doing, because like a lot of times people don't necessarily know what it is that we're going through or why things happen on television the way that they happen. You have a very limited window as far as of knowledge, as far as like why things happen as a fan or a consumer. But the podcast allows us to have the time to talk about what it is that we want to talk about and get to explain things from a different perspective. And that way, you know, people have a little bit more of a perspective as far as like why things might have went down the way that they do, or why this match went this way, or why you did this in this match and didn't do that. You know what I mean? So it's great. It's a good venue for us to really be able to give that to the people. And I think wrestling has a history of like our fans wanting to know what is going on behind the scenes. And I think with social media, we've been able to open up those doors and allow people to see like us on our off days, you know, versus in the 90s and early 2000s and 80s, you know, people didn't have that kind of access to WWE and to wrestlers in general. So to be able to do that on our terms and talk about what we want to talk about on our podcast is it's liberating, and it's cool, and it's awesome to be able to give people that insight that they've been craving for so long.
Absolutely, Kofi. Kofi Kingston here, one of the three co-hosts of The New Day. I don't want to get that wrong either. The New Day, Feel the Power podcast on the WWE Podcast Network. Get it wherever you listen to fine audio like this show. State of Combat, Kofi, thanks once again for joining us. You know, let's get you another heavyweight title run, maybe a Royal Rumble too while we're at it. What do you think?
Hey, let's get all the accolades. As a kid, that was always my goal, was to win every single championship. But why stop there? You know, let's go with the Rumbles. Let's go with all the ladder matches. How about we go with 100% win percentage for the year? No one's ever done that.
Hey, you came pretty close. You came pretty close the last 6 months, though. Let's be honest.
Very true. Very true. Yeah, man. I appreciate you guys, man.
All right, Jack. That was a lot of fun with Kofi. He is seemingly one of the truly nicest guys that exist in WWE. And I think it's fair to say, I was rooting for him during WrestleMania season, way before that even. If anyone that listened to the show knows, I was on board with Kofi being WWE champion, like way before that even started. To see him have that kind of success this past year, to see him be so positive in the face of a moment with Lesnar that a lot of people, fans in particular, didn't like. I know that Big E and Xavier didn't like them either. I didn't like that either. To see him be so positive and believe that his title reign meant more than just the representation that we actually discussed, but that he thinks it's actually going to have ramifications for the future of the company, to me, that made me feel very positive coming out of it.
It was a joy to have him on. Honestly, and I say this sincerely, all the years I've been watching wrestling, especially WWE/WWF, one of my all-time favorite superstars. It's been a pleasure to watch that man's career from start to whatever the finish line is in the ring. It's truly been a pleasure. That man, you can't say enough about. Now let's get our man's a Royal Rumble win. Let's cap off everything. Let's get him a Royal Rumble win.
Absolutely. And we do have our year-end awards for professional wrestling coming next week. That will be in place of next week's show. BC, Jack and myself, we're going to break down everything from Wrestler of the Year to Moment of the Year to Worst Angle of the Year. You guys know we do it every single calendar year here with WWE, NXT, NJPW, and now for the first time, AEW as well. So it's going to be a really interesting show. What I can tell you, slight sneak peek, is Kofi Kingston won one of the awards on the show. So listen next week to find out what that is. Jack, before we get out of here, there's a couple things I want to talk about. Really coming out of Raw. Primarily, I really did not like the Gauntlet match. The match was great. The action was good. But they end the match with Andrade basically winning because Humberto Carrillo was unable to continue because Andrade beat him up outside the ring. They don't tell us that on commentary. So they just let it linger. And then later in the show, you have Seth Rollins, who came out and cut a pretty good promo with AOP, kind of saying, this is what we're doing. We're taking things over here. And, you know, we're going to take the WWE and Raw into the new decade. Challenging Rey Mysterio for a United States Championship shot that seemingly Andrade won. Or at the time, we didn't know Andrade actually won. But they had an hour-long gauntlet match that we thought ended in a no contest without an actual number one contender. That is lazy, terrible, shitty booking. Period. It sucked. Period.
As much as, like, you and I have praised Raw how many weeks in a row now, Adam? Just every week. That was good. That was the first time in a while I looked at the TV and went, what the hell are you doing? Why did I just waste that hour of my life to get no resolution, only to have Seth Rollins go, I'm taking the title shot. Now, I mean, look, you know, it's 2019. We're entering 2020. I do urge people, if they haven't, go look up. Raw was taped afterwards for next week. The December 23rd Raw was taped. If you like spoilers, I urge you to go look at them for next week.
But let me ask you this, because I don't like spoilers. Is there a resolution to the storyline?
There
that
is
makes sense?
The, not necessarily, but you're not going to care as much about it.
Okay.
When you see what happens.
Okay, that's fair, and that's a nice tease for, you know, ahead of Monday, since
Although I have Adam, I have a question for you. My wife asked me this actually.
Sure.
When I told her how they were doing it, would you ever sit through two Raws in a row? Like that.
Yes, because they don't tape. It's not 6 hours. So they started an hour early.
Just out of curiosity.
Yeah, no, I would. I would. In fact, I'd probably be more likely to want to go do Raw if I knew it was two. The problem is if they're taping two, generally it's a holiday situation. And you know, the content isn't going to be as good as like a regular like Raw after SummerSlam, right? Which is going to be really good. But I've gone to a couple Raw after WrestleManias recently.
Yeah.
And honestly, not that enjoyable. Not as enjoyable as they used to be. But also the product wasn't as good. But the Raw now, like the Raw that we got the 5 weeks prior to this one, could I sit through two of those full shows? Yeah, I could.
Okay. No, just like I said, my wife, because when she said, wait, what are they doing? I said, oh, they're taping next week's Raw so that, you know, these guys don't have to be on the road for the holidays.
Yeah.
They're giving them sort of a vacation. And she said, would we ever? I said, I guess so, because the second taping wouldn't be as bad with commercials and stuff like that.
My thought is you're there. I mean, just do it. You know what I mean? Like, it's not that big of a deal.
But anyway, the ending of next week's Raw should have a lot of people smiling heading into 2020.
Okay, and that is a nice tease.
I'll say that.
That's a nice tease, because I certainly have no idea what happens next week, and I don't want to be spoiled. So that's great. The only other thing from Raw I really want to mention, again, I thought the show just wasn't good. I'm not going to say it sucked like Dynamite did. But after 5 weeks of pretty awesome, you and I pretty much agree, Raws, I thought it was just a really down, boring episode.
Yeah,
it was cool that Deonna Purrazzo was on there from NXT. Don't want to really go on about it, but she was there. It was good for Asuka to get a singles win, continue looking dominant. And I just thought it was, like I said, an otherwise boring episode. And that's really the full takeaway, I think, from Raw. It was, coming out of TLC, we were really curious what was going to happen, particularly with Rollins and Owens. And Owens certainly wasn't there, which is fine. He was selling the concrete stomp from the week before. And I think Rollins did a fine job, but it just didn't make a ton of sense combined with everything else that was really happening. So last but not least on this show, and if you hate potential spoilers, you can turn it off now. The rest of the show is going to be us talking about one topic for a couple minutes. We're going to say goodbye. We're going to play Savage. We're going to send you into next week's award show. That's the rest of the show. So if you do not want to be spoiled for WWE stuff, stop listening. Okay, you were warned. There's a report out today, Jack, right before we taped this show, that Adam Copeland, better known as Edge, was in Pittsburgh doing WWE business. And this report, by the way, came from PW Insider. And the report is that the WWE business he was doing in Pittsburgh was seeing Dr. Joseph Maroon. And anyone who followed the Daniel Bryan situation closely knows that Dr. Maroon is ultimately the final say on whether WWE will clear a wrestler for competition, someone who's been out with spinal injury or concussion issues or whatever the case. And there have been rumors for months now that Edge might make a comeback to WWE. And certainly we saw Edge spear, was it Elias?
Yeah, Elias.
Spear Elias a few months ago in Toronto.
SummerSlam, yeah.
At SummerSlam in Toronto in a moment that got people talking. We are now pretty far removed from that. And the other report that PW Insider has about Edge is that he just recently re-signed a multi-year deal with WWE with a high upside. The Edge and Christian podcast is over. Christian is on WWE Backstage. I don't know whether they're continuing their TV show on the network, the Reeks of Awesomeness show, which is pretty good. But the rumor is, and I think this is the rumor that we're all kind of getting at, is Edge entering the Royal Rumble in a major newsworthy surprise. So I don't know if it's going to happen, but it is a spoiler I came across potentially. And Jack, I'm really curious. I don't think BC is a huge fan of Edge. Are you?
I was never... Oh, God, it's so hard for me to explain because I hate the, I don't want to use the word overrated. I was just never as high on Edge as a lot of other people were. I love the respect his accomplishments, everything. Entertaining is all hell. I'll give the guy that. What great heel. But, you know, this top of the mountain, Mount Rushmore type that some people make him out to be. No. Am I okay with him coming back? Yeah, I am, if that's the case. And I understand that a lot of people might be angry at WWE for maybe giving him a new contract and especially be a performer. But what they have to understand is, while I just said he's not like a Mount Rushmore type, let's say Edge is cleared to compete. We are also in an era where you can't let him go to AEW. Like you when you're WWE, you can't be in a position where Edge is like, hey, man, went to like five doctors, you know, like Brian did. I'm good to go. And look at me. I'm jacked. I'm ripped to shreds. I want to get back in there. You can't just say, oh, well, no, Edge. It's because he's going to go to AEW and he's still a name. And he'll go make a name on TNT and give that show buzz. That's a real thing now to worry about. So WWE has to be like, all right, man, if you want to come back in, you come on back in with us, Royal Rumble, the whole nine yards. But I'd be interested to see Edge work with a lot of these new guys in this generation.
I don't even think it's an AEW type of thing. I think it's just like with Brian. It's if you are able, healthy and able, we would be fools not to have you, because WWE they're just missing those big names because it's their own fault, because they don't build up enough people to be consistent draws. And if you can get a consistent draw like Edge and you can put him on SmackDown, your big flagship show on Fox,
And he's Mr. Smacked. Like, you would have to.
It really changes the dynamic, and it really gets people talking about, wow, Edge is back, and what are they going to do with him, and is he going to be champion again, and so on and so forth. He's been gone, people forget, for a long time. He hasn't wrestled.
It was after 20...
I think it's like
8 years.
Yeah, 8 years. Okay, even longer than I thought. It's a long absence, and he is older at this point. So if he's healthy and he's able and there's no risk for his long-term health, it's a huge one. I'm not a massive Edge fan. I did like the Rated R Superstar gimmick. Certainly his entrance music's awesome. But he's a big win if WWE can get him back in the fold. And we don't know what's going to happen. And there's a lot we're speculating here, and we're kind of playing a little bit of spoiler here. But that happened right before we came on the air today. I happened to read that. My friend texted it to me. And I said, holy crap, because that is a difference maker. It's not a CM Punk difference maker, but it is a difference maker.
No, you get to, if you could have Edge back in, you're good.
And that is it for today's show. Like I said, next week, our year-end awards edition of the State of Combat Professional Wrestling show. I think they're going to do similar type of shows for MMA and boxing, but do not hold me to that. Hit us up, Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen to podcasts. Drop the 5-star review. It's the holiday season. Give us the gift of your love. 5 stars. Not 1, not 2, not 3, not 4. It's all about D5. You can follow Jack on Twitter at JCrosbyCBS. You can follow me at Silverstein Adam. Follow the podcast at State of Combat. Thank you all for another tremendous year of professional wrestling. Love hearing from you guys on Twitter in the comments. Appreciate the passionate listenership. And if I don't get the opportunity to say it on our next show, I hope everyone has a Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Kwanzaa, Happy Holidays, Happy New Year, all the good stuff. But for Jack, this is the Silver King. And when I run the show, when Silver King is in the host chair, you know we always end with the full savage.
Elizabeth, come on out here, man. Whoa. We got something going that's really big, Mercy. Don't we? Yeah. Look in the video scope right now and tell them about Macho Madness. Tell them how strong it is and tell them where we're going, yeah. We into the Twilight Zone, yeah. And Hulk Hogan's got no chance, does he? No. Does anybody have a chance against the Macho Man, Randy Savage? Am I the greatest wrestler past, present, and future that ever lived?
Yes, you are.
Okay, now say goodbye. Say goodbye.
Bye.
Okay, now get out of here.
That's
right
a little
now.
Rough, Randy.
Yeah, but it is rough. Yeah, wrestling is a rough sport. And I am the roughest one in the sport. I am the number one wrestler in the world today. Tell Hulk Hogan that.
I will. Thank you, Randy Savage.
And we got 2 last words for you. We out.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.